From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, AFSCME has a new contract with the state. It has now been ratified. Also, the governor back from his trade mission to the UK and touting clean energy. And a new audit shows billions of dollars in overpayments. Those are some of the topics we'll discuss on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler's on vacation this week. Joining us, we have Patrick Keck. He is the State House reporter for the State Journal Register in Springfield. Patrick, thanks for being along with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, we have Peter Hancock, a reporter for Capital News Illinois. And Peter, it's always good to have you with us as well.
Thanks, Sean. Good to be here.
So let's move to, first and foremost, this AFSCME contract. This has been months of negotiations before it finally got finalized earlier this month, and it has been ratified over the last couple of weeks. Peter, this has several different factors in it, but let's talk first and foremost about salaries. There's going to be some more money for state workers.
That's right. They're getting roughly a 4% pay raise this year. It's retroactive to July 1st, I think. Other raises throughout the term of the four-year contract, total amounting to just under 18%, I think. It's going to cost an additional $204 million this year and roughly $625 million over the course of the four-year contract.
Now, not everybody that works for state government is in a union, and certainly not everybody is in the AFSCME union. Give us an idea of some of the people, though, that this will impact.
Well, it's about 35,000 workers are represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. That includes Department of Corrections workers, people who work in state hospitals. It's the largest public employee union for the state, and it just has lots and lots of just frontline workers for the state of Illinois.
So, Patrick, when it comes to this contract, we mentioned the money that's in there and the pay raises, but also there are other factors that were important to the union in this as well, and includes things like retention and the hiring process. You know, fill us in a bit on what the changes will be there.
Yeah, absolutely. In conversations I had, prior to this contract being ratified, there was a big push from AFSCME Council 31, regarding, we need to do better at, not just hiring, state workers, but retaining them. That 35,000 number mentioned, they said, typically, what they think they would represent if these vacancies were more filled out, I guess, would be closer to 43,000. So you're talking, or 8,000 positions. This has led to, and especially during the pandemic, was, a lot of people had to put in extra hours to fill in, for that needed work, but there just wasn't the needed staffing for it. So this contract looks to address that, trying to make it a little more of a modern, digitally based process when it comes to hiring. There's also talks of creating a pilot program that would offer recruitment bonuses for positions that have been particularly hard to fill. And also there's like a management committee that will look into more of those reasons, examining why this is such a problem that really kind of grew out of the pandemic in terms of vacant positions in state government.
And Patrick, there have been people who, going into this entire process, especially Republicans, many of them were concerned about the cost of this contract. And the way these contracts are put together, the public, the media, we don't really know what it's all about until it's been ratified. And there was concern about the cost being several hundred million dollars more that the state was going to have to shell out. As was mentioned, it looks like, according to the governor's office, about $620 million more over the life of this contract it will cost taxpayers. But has the reaction to that been okay, or have people said, hey, this is just not feasible?
That so in the lead up to budget negotiations, there was a concern from primarily Republicans that this contract is not accounted for in the budget. The one for the new fiscal year, they basically were saying that, you know, this will lead to another kind of shortfall. And so the governor's office, they have responded to those claims, saying that was not founded, and that the budget, in fact, did include the needed funding to account for negotiation contract expenses. However, you know, that still seems to be a concern for Republicans and conservative lines of thinking, most specifically the Illinois Policy Institute. That's they're still concerned that this contract will lead to inflation and higher expenses for people living in Illinois.
In any thing right now, we're talking about, you know, the cost of labor going up because the job market's been so tight. So this is not a surprise in any way. In fact, you have inflation, which is, of course, impacting people's buying ability. So the 4% or so raises per year, that's not a shock, I would guess. But what reaction have you heard on this?
I haven't heard a whole lot of reaction. There has been, you know, some typical Republican reaction that this is way too much money and it's going to force a tax increase at some point down the road. But I think from the administration standpoint, there were a number of considerations. One is that Governor Pritzker is a very pro-union, pro-labor Democrat, and labor unions, of course, exert a lot of influence during election time. But there's been this perennial issue of understaffing in state government, in part because the hiring process is kind of old and clunky and it needs to be modernized. But also, you know, everybody is competing for labor right now. There's a labor shortage, and state government needed to step up to the plate in order to solve the understaffing problem that is also affecting people's lives and careers. And then, yeah, I mean, state workers have been hit by inflation as much as anybody else. And so, you know, a 4% pay raise right now is really not that far out of line.
Well, we'll continue to follow this. Of course, it's a 4-year contract, and so that'll take it right through the next election cycle. And it could be another governor's issue the next time that the negotiations happen if J.B. Pritzker's not in office still. But let's move on. We will talk now about an audit that has come out this week involving the Illinois Department of Employment Security. And Peter, this goes back to the early days of the pandemic and even the months after that, when, of course, the push was on because of closures that were happening in businesses to get people this type of emergency unemployment insurance. And it turns out a lot of problems, which we knew they were there, but now we've got a number to go with that, a whopping $5 billion in overpayments and possible fraud and things like that were paid out. Fill us in on more details about this audit. What does it show?
Well, like you say, it was about $5.25 billion of overpayments. If you'll remember, in the early days of the pandemic, when the stay-at-home orders and the forced business closures went into effect, I mean, unemployment just shot through the roof. And the priority was to get the money out, get it done as fast as possible, so that the economy didn't, you know, spiral, you know, go into a kind of a death spiral. There was also a program, and it was all federally funded, to get unemployment out to independent contractors and gig workers, the people who wouldn't normally qualify for regular unemployment. And that program was cobbled together by Congress in a very, very short amount of time. They didn't put in a lot of safeguards to prevent fraud, the kinds of identity checking and work history, things that would be normally be done. And, you know, because there were so many people who were suddenly unemployed, and the Department of Employment Security, It just couldn't handle the volume of applications that were coming in, and their offices were closed as well. People couldn't go in and talk to somebody in person. Everything had to be done online. And so there just were not a lot of controls, and we had to run it through a system that just wasn't designed for that volume of demand. And so, there was apparently a lot of fraud, a lot of identity theft. There were payments that went out to dead people. There were payments that were made in the names of incarcerated individuals. There was just a lot. Scamsters knew that, you know, everybody was overworked, overburdened, and you could get fraudulent claims through very quickly. So that's basically what happened. The auditor made several recommendations to have, including one, which is to have kind of a recession plan so that when there is this big surge in unemployment claims over a very short period of time, they have systems in place to handle it.
So, Patrick, I guess I'll ask again, what's been the reaction to this? I'm assuming that a lot of people were shocked by what they've seen, and yet in some cases not surprised, because we've known the problems did exist, and we've been hearing about that for several years now.
Yes. So it has been, in terms of, you know, response, it has been kind of a politically laden. We are seeing mainly members of the minority party here in the state kind of calling out you know, poor handling by the Pritzker administration and the IDES. And, you know, that's been an opportunity for them to, I guess, kind of push, you know, those kinds of issues again to the forefront. One thing that was noted, I think, in the article from the Tribune was that this also kind of showed, you know, not just perhaps the existing safeguards were not adequate, but also that, you know, due to such an influx of demand, some of those safeguards in terms of, you know, verification of identity and things like that, that would have maybe lessen the degree of which fraudulent activity happened, just due to such a high number of requests, they had to kind of scale back on those. So that kind of brings in, you know, perhaps again, what we were talking about in terms of staffing and state government, again, with the contract almost, those might be kind of related in terms of the workload being so intense for IDES during this period, and just having to again scale back just so it could administer money. But again, good deal of fraud happened, perhaps due to the scaling back of these measures.
Just wanted to add one thing in here, that during the pandemic, the unemployment insurance fund that the state manages went deep into debt. We had to borrow billions of dollars from the federal government to cover all the payments. It just didn't have the money in it to handle that volume of claims. That money had to be repaid to the federal government. Now, some of it was repaid with federal dollars, disaster relief money, but that's money that could have gone somewhere else. And so this really did cost the state of Illinois and Illinois taxpayers a lot of money.
Could the outdated, outmoded computer systems in the state, how big of a role did that play? Do we know? I mean, I would imagine quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it did. And people were talking about that at the time, that, you know, this huge surge in applications that had to be done online. You couldn't do it in person. It was almost impossible to get anybody on the phone. The systems just were not able to handle that. It was an extraordinary circumstance, and Illinois, as most other states, just didn't have the infrastructure in place to handle it.
Have we heard anything yet about the possibility of recouping at least some of this money, or maybe that's already happening? Have we heard any more about it?
Well, the audit made note of the fact that a small amount of it has been recovered, but not very much. And that's, you know, one of the questions that we've had out to the governor's office is what steps are going to be taken to recoup as much of that money as possible, recover it from whomever. But I think, you know, largely the state's going to have to write it off. It's going to be very difficult to recover that money. And it costs money to go out and recover that money. So, you know, the net gain of the additional effort it would take, you know, you kind of have to weigh the cost and the benefit of it.
You are listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. And our guests today include Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois and Patrick Keck with the State Journal Register. Well, Governor J.B. Pritzker is back from a trade mission to the U.K. Peter, it seemed like his focus during this trip was primarily on clean energy. He talked about many other things as well, but really he's pushing Illinois as a leader when it comes to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and building a clean energy economy. And that was really what he was trying to do over in the UK, it seemed.
Well, that was certainly a big part of it. He was also pushing a lot of more traditional industries, but you know, at least about half the time, he was pushing the fact that Illinois is home to electric vehicle manufacturing, that it has this new Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, which puts Illinois on a path to 100% zero emission energy over a long period of time. And, you know, he was basically pitching the state of Illinois to European companies, saying, you know, your customers want you to manufacture your products and deliver services in an environmentally sustainable way. And Illinois is a place that has very strong policies in place to do that. So he was really selling the clean energy economy as a selling point for the state of Illinois.
Yeah, our image, I guess, Patrick, has not been necessarily one of clean energy through the years. Rust Belt economy for Illinois, and also the coal mining industry, very popular here. So it's a complete pivot, really, from what Illinois has been known for through the years, but it seems to be something that seems to be catching on. Earlier this week, the governor was at a facility in Joliet for Lion Electric, which is an auto manufacturer making EV manufacturing those cars there and trucks. And this is, again, the governor's part of the governor's pivot. But yes, does the message seem to be getting out there across the country and even across the world that Illinois is in the clean energy industry?
I do think that has been a noted, you know, push. You know, when we look at, you know, Governor Pritzker's in terms of, you know, I've been looking into some of the changes with the Illinois Commerce Commission, for instance. You know, that's a lot of people that were, you know, behind, you know, the earlier stages of the CEJA policy, now they have, you know, stakes, leadership roles within ICC. You know, recent example in terms of, you know, getting the word out that, you know, the state is really trying to be a beacon of green energy. Earlier this week, the governor took action on a bill that would create tax credits for businesses that are looking to use clean hydrogen. Here, it's a House Bill 2204. It'd be a $10 million a year tax credit. So I think that's certainly the image that, you know, the state is, you know, trying to move forward to. How this will, you know, impact our state's standing, you know, domestically, internationally, I think that's something that, you know, we'll continue to see over time.
And Peter, I'll get your thoughts on that as well. Has Illinois been able to make that shift enough that we're looked at nationally, at least as a leader in this new industry?
I don't know that we would be like the number one or number two leader. Certainly other states have adopted policies that, you know, are just as forward looking. But certainly, you know, if you look around the country, the whole debate over climate change and carbon emissions has just gotten so politicized. that there are some states, especially in the South and in the Great Plains, that, you know, just have adopted the complete other kind of philosophy. And this is one of the things that the governor was saying in the trade, that trade mission, was that, you know, you can get cheaper labor in places like Mississippi or Arkansas, but you're not going to get the clean manufacturing that you're going to get here. And, you know, we're in a global economy, customers worldwide are starting to demand that. And so certainly he's keeping Illinois in the game, so to speak, on that front. There's maybe a lot more that we could do, and probably a lot more that we will do in the future. But, you know, certainly Illinois is in the game.
Well, one project that has been touted as being at least somewhat clean energy, or at least cleaner energy, is a pipeline project. It would take CO2 emissions from several different plants across the Midwest and send them through a pipeline into Illinois, where they would be sequestered south of Springfield. Patrick, you've been covering this. A lot of opposition to it, a lot of vocal opposition. But fill us in on where does this project stand at this point?
Yes, so a pipeline you're in reference to is Navigator Heartland Greenways pipeline. It's about almost 1,400 miles stretching through several states. And, you know, it's going to process CO2 emissions from ethanol plants and store them. And that's, for starters, that's part of where we are with this process. This is an application being heard before the Illinois Commerce Commission. That's something that will be reviewed over the course of 11 months. And basically, when we hear where things stand, Navigator has encountered difficulties in terms of securing a positive public opinion right now in terms of right-of-way easements. As of June, they had only about 13% of the people that they've, you know, tried to, you know, get their approval from. And a lot of that opposition stems from safety concerns. What happens if there is a pipeline burst? Most notably, opponents look to an incident from 2020 in Setarsha, Mississippi, when a pipeline burst and led to a good deal of evacuations and hospitalizations. So there's a concern that existing regulations, both at the federal and state level, are inadequate, and they are calling for a moratorium on any pipeline construction. You know, while these regulations are set by the at the federal level, and they're looking to have these regulations ready, I believe, sometime next year. So the moratorium request is that there's no action until these new guidelines are set.
You mentioned the Illinois Commerce Commission. I'm assuming they have to get approval from some other commerce commissions or whatever the regulatory body might be in different states as well. So, I mean, this is quite a regulatory hurdle, it seems.
The ICC is part of the approval. I believe it's also U.S. Army Civil Corps engineers that would also be involved in some of the stakes. The federal agency that is setting these guidelines is the U.S. Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration. So they, after the Setarsha incident, they announced plans that, you know, we're going to, you know, set these regulations just because while CO2 is pipelines have been industry for some time, the push has really become stronger in recent years. Not only is there this Navigator pipeline that's been requested, there's also one from a company, Woof Carbon, that would run closer to the Peoria area and touch some surrounding counties of Sangamon County. So it's a growing industry here in Illinois, partially due to the fact that the geology of this region is really strong. It's the Mount Simon formation, a lot of sandstone, which the properties of sandstone make it safer for sequestration, underground storage of CO2.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. And just a few minutes left here, but let's turn our attention to other legislation that's been signed. Peter, you covered this, addressing homelessness, some legislation. What does this measure do?
Okay, so it basically codifies an executive order that Pritzker signed in 2021, where marshaling the resources of several state agencies and coordinating them to address the issue of homelessness. The goal here, the phrase Pritzker uses, is to get to functional zero in terms of homelessness, which he says means that it's rare, it's brief, and it's non-recurring. Homelessness is really, it's a collection of circumstances in somebody's life. And, you know, everything from the cost of rent to housing discrimination to maybe temporary unemployment, all kinds of things contribute to it. And it's estimated that somewhere north of 100,000 people a year in Illinois experience homelessness for at least part of the year. And that includes people who are doubling up or couch surfing, as some people call it, temporarily staying with other people because they've lost their own apartment or their own house. And so the idea is to coordinate this. There is a person who's in charge of this interagency task force. Her name is Christine Haley, who holds kind of the informal title of chief homelessness officer for the state of Illinois, who's in charge of kind of coordinating all this stuff. And so it is kind of a big deal. And also the effort is being given a lot more money in the budget. There's millions of dollars in the budget. I think $350 million total for the whole range of services to address homelessness. And it's a big increase over previous years. So essentially that's what it is. It's just a statewide effort across multiple agencies to try and basically eliminate homelessness as we know it now.
And only about 30 seconds here, Peter, but this is not a problem that's going to get resolved in one budget and one budget cycle or one, you know, even a few years. This is going to be an ongoing thing, I'm assuming, from the state, but more of a focus on homelessness.
Yeah, that's right. And that's essentially what this bill does, is it puts this coordinated effort into law. So it's going to stick around across administrations long into the future.
Well, that will do it for this episode of State Week. And I want to thank our guests today. Our panel included Patrick Keck with the State Journal Register and Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Charlie Wheeler is still on vacation. You can find our show where you get your podcasts and at nprillinois.org and through the NPR One app. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.